Welcome to Pints and Politics. I'm your host, Dan Parsons. Welcome to episode number 43. Can you believe we've been doing this for years now? And as our regular listeners and viewers know, Pints and Politics is an event-driven podcast that talks to the thought leaders of the day, and we talk about the most important issues of the day. And we have fun, and we do that while enjoying a delicious Nebraska craft beer. And so let me introduce our guest for today, Mr. Walt Radcliffe. And Walt, I did the Google this afternoon just to see what people call you. And the phrase that came up over and over was longtime lobbyist. So we both have gray hair. Yours looks much brighter than mine. But long time is a title that you wear comfortably.
I guess, you know, Mark Twain said that politicians, village whores, and old buildings, if they survive long enough, become respectable. So I hope I've been able to do that.
I think you have, Walt. Thank you for agreeing to come on Pints and Politics. Walt and I have known each other for a long, long time, and I'll get into a little bit of backstory. But let me just, as a way of introduction, just a little bit of background about Walt. Graduate of Lincoln Southeast, Knight. A graduate of the University of Nebraska and a graduate of the University of Nebraska Law School. And again, Google tells me, Walt, that your first job was a page and a proofreader in the legislature. Is that true?
That's correct, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I've never left. I'm like a pheasant. I've lived my whole life in a 4 mile square area.
Is that what pheasants do?
Yeah they don't move much,
but nobody's got just a shot off
shot.
On
no them. Yeah, well, I've been shot at, just not knocked down.
And and you formed your group back in the 70s, and you're the preeminent godfather of Nebraska legislative lobby, and so it's just a joy to have you on the show.
It's my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the compliment.
Yeah, well, it's well earned. Well, so we do, as our tradition has it, let's talk about our craft beer. So this is a Kincaidor from our friends from Kincaidor up in Broken Bow, and this is their Frame the Butcher IPA. And, of course, Kincaidor is from Broken Bow. They have a location in Grand Island. And also right here in Lincoln, just down the street here in the Haymarket. But this is Frame the Butcher IPA, a fresh aroma and a bright taste. But they always tell a story. So the story of this beer, Salmon Butcher, he failed as a farmer. He failed as a salesman. He failed as a teacher. I don't know if you fail as a teacher. Didn't like it, I guess.
Graded himself.
And a postmaster. He did all those things back in the 1800s in Custer County. But he found his love for photography. And he was a photographer. And he photographed. He became known as the photographer of the plains. And he took pictures of homesteaders throughout Nebraska. And so that's why this he's in a frame. And so anyway, a little history about Salmon Butcher. But Walt, cheers.
Cheers, and here's to Kincaidor and the Nebraska brewing industry.
Yes. That's all right.
Absolutely. Anything that's cold, and you bet. Very nice. Very nice.
That is good. So we'll, as we always do, we'll put the notes in on the website, and so you can learn all about Salmon the Butcher and this wonderful IPA. So, Walt, I just wanted to tell this story as we began. I was a young punk kid back in the 80s, had finished college, was looking for something to do, had an interest in politics, had an interest in the Nebraska legislature. I didn't know anybody. And so I called up your office. You may or may not remember this. And I said, Mr. Radcliffe, I was either still a student or just graduated. But I said, I'd like to meet you and talk to you because I'm fascinated by what you do. I'm fascinated by politics. I'm fascinated with the Nebraska legislature. Well, I think most people of that stature, and you know, it's like, well, hey, kid, that's great. I don't know that I have time for you. You didn't do that. You said yes. You said, please come to my office and let's talk. And so I came to your office, and who knows what I was wearing. But we had a wonderful conversation. You were so gracious. You were so kind. And here we are a few years later, and I have made a career out of public relations and politics. But I always
and
remember
a very
that.
Successful one, I might add.
Well, thank you, Walt. You've been so kind and encouraging through the years.
Well, thank you. And I do remember our first meeting.
You do.
And we've
okay.
had several subsequent ones, all of which have been enjoyable.
And
in some instances, even productive.
We have had some productive meetings. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
But you have had an incredible career. And currently, I mean, it's not like you're done. There's a lot of work yet to do in that sandstone building down the street. And we've got a legislature session coming up in January. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about what it's like, what changes you've seen through the years. We'll talk about maybe some specific issues if you'd like. But what's changed through the years as you've observed?
One that is very obvious is technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I could elaborate on that. But we used to do mailings. And every night we'd send out literally hundreds of dollars worth of mailings. And quite frankly, now we with a stroke, by hit send, you accomplish that.
I remember when the fax machine came along.
Yes.
I'm old enough to think.
Yes.
And it's like, oh my gosh, you mean I can push this button and send this news release to all the Nebraska reporters? Because I'm old enough, the old days, here, I would...
Oh, absolutely.
Fold it up, put it in an envelope, address it to Don Walton, or I'd walk it down to Don at the Journal Star.
Yes.
And that's how we did things. So, technology has changed all of our lives tremendously.
And another thing that the lobbying business and politics in general is no longer just a white male profession.
Yep.
We have seen so many more women and minorities get involved, and that's a sea change from what it was.
Yeah,
in
it
the
was
late
all
70s.
White male dominated profession.
Yeah. So it's and I find myself now reporting to and working for a lot of women and minorities.
You bet.
That heretofore wasn't there. The other thing, I could go on with changes, but one of the things that's changed, at least the complexion of the legislature, and I think Nebraska, is term limits.
Yep.
And not changed it for the better.
Nope. Well, and I appreciate you saying that, because a lot of people have observed your profession has become much more important, and because you have the institutional knowledge.
Well, yes, and I mean that is a good argument from an academician standpoint.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is, term limits has given us a lot of single issue people. They really don't care about it. They don't care for me to sit down and talk about LB such and such. They only care about how LB such and such affects whatever their singular particular interest is. And those interests, frankly, run the gamut. Because in order for me to convey a message to somebody, that person has to be willing, one, to invest the time, and two, to at least be interested enough to have things register. And very honestly, I don't blame people for not necessarily caring about some nuance in the insurance law or the banking law. Now, if they're on the committee, that's different, but no, otherwise not.
You know, you talked about technology. I'd be interested because, I have adult children, and it seems like the only way I can get the attention of my adult children is by sending them a text message on this machine. Have you found that with lobbying as well?
Very much so. It's interesting. COVID has brought that about.
Yeah, that's true.
Because frankly, we couldn't spend time in the rotunda. We didn't spend time sending notes in.
That had to be fascinating.
So you texted people.
Yeah.
And, they got texts. They got, dozens and dozens of texts. So you didn't have, you had no guarantee necessarily that they saw or read yours. And so you'd find yourself maybe texting the senator who sits next to him, who you know is going to look at the text and say, hey, hit so-and-so, you know. And so that certainly had a lot to do with it. And also, obviously, Zoom calls. But I've yet to resolve a contentious issue on a Zoom call.
That is so fascinating, Walt. Because your business is about connecting face-to-face. Your business is about connecting with people, being able to articulate a policy issue and a stand. And, yeah, COVID must just be awful.
Well, it changed the dynamics, but it's the old deal. Everybody was playing on the same playing field.
Right.
Two slow horses make a good race.
Yep. You know, as you know, I spent some time over in the Capitol, and if nothing else in your profession, all the years that you've served over in that building down the street, what a joy to walk in that building and see the architecture and just the magnificent. Well, first of all, you are the preeminent lobbyist in this state, and the unique opportunity we have in Nebraska as the only one house legislature in America to see that firsthand for decades now, and to see that process firsthand. People don't know, who don't live in Nebraska, what a unique system we have.
Well, we really do, and the nonpartisan aspect, in addition to it being a unicameral. But to be very honest with you, and I don't want to gloss over what you said about the Capitol. I mean, it's a magnificent building. The HVAC system that they're putting in has really thrown things off over there as far as where you can go and how you get there. You can always get somewhere, but sometimes it's a very circuitous route.
And it just seems like it goes on and on and
well,
on.
Well, yes.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a big building.
I'm ready for them to start over again. but no, that's very true. It's just
because there's
place.
Senators way up in the tower,
yes.
And you can't even get to them.
No, the elevators are. I mean, it's like getting in a closet.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, but like I say, everybody's playing the same.
Yeah,
the
everybody's same it's a level playing
that's
field.
Right.
Whoever else is trying to talk to those
that's
folks,
right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to, we don't have to, but I would be derelict in my journalistic duties if I didn't ask you for a story or two. and I didn't prep this to say, what's your favorite one or two stories? But there's a lot of shenanigans that happen over at that building, on the floor even. So I don't know. And tell us a story.
I tell you, my first day as a page.
Yeah.
Senator Haysbrook pushed his button, so I go back there as a page, and he says, "We'd like two coffees and two hot chocolates." I said, "You bet, Senator." So I went down to the cafeteria and I bought two hot chocolates and two coffees and took them upstairs. There, that was 40 cents. We're getting paid a buck and a quarter an hour. So I gave them to them. They kind of looked at them funny because they weren't their regular ones. I said, well, you know, they're two hot chocolates and two coffees. So then a little bit later, somebody else pushes a button and hands me four letters to mail. No stamps. So I go to the downstairs to the post office in the Capitol and I mail the letters. By that time, I'd used up my first hour's wages. And I went back up and I said to Kitty Carnes, who was kind of the head of the pages then, and just recently passed away,
yeah.
Great lady.
Yeah.
I said, you know, a guy could go broke in this business. And she says, what are you talking about? So I told her. She says, let me show you where the coffee and beverages are. And we got our own private post office over here. But I'm still buying coffee and hot chocolate for people. And the price has gone up.
Yeah, that was a bargain back then.
Yeah.
How has the civility of the legislature changed over the years? Have you seen a change?
Well, sure. And I think all you got to do is pick up the newspaper or watch the legislature. It has certainly changed in the public's eye. Privately, you can get people will still get together who were kind of, you know, antagonistic on the floor and be able to get together afterwards and share a conversation or a drink or a meal, but not all of them. I mean, there's some people that you just would not invite both of them to come to the same event. Well, when you invite everybody, but I mean, if you were doing a small event,
you know better than
you wouldn't do it. And that again goes back, I think, to electing single issue candidates. Mm-hmm. They come down, they've got their friends, they've got their enemies, and we don't want to, enemies I don't have to talk to.
Yep. You know. Financials, the finances of politics and your business. Seems like it's an arms race. Every year, there's more and more money spent to get these people elected. The last legislative, or the last cycle, we saw, I think, for the first time, a legislative race that, I'm going to forget the details, but extraordinary amount of money. I think it was Ellie Bostar's race.
Yes, they both together they spent about $1 million.
I was going to say $1 million.
But you know, money.
I'm sorry to interrupt. $1 million to get a $12,000 job.
Right. I mean, personally, as far as I'm concerned, you could go to public financing. Now you're not going to be able to eliminate somebody with wealth running their own campaign or third parties. But, and this sounds a little corny, but there's a reason why the signers of the Declaration of Independence pledged their honor, their lives, and their fortunes. I mean, money has always been a part of the political process. Yep. And the secret to it, if you will, or the key to it is, if you can disclose it, money is... Right. A corrupting influence. There's no question about that. But it does not necessarily lead to corruption.
Right. As long as we shine the light
absolutely
on what's going on.
That's right.
And everybody understands that.
That's right. I mean, you know, we represent some of the banking industry. Hey, if a banker's running for the legislature, we're going to support them. And we're not buying their vote because they're already predisposed. So, you know, I look for people when I'm talking to candidates, one, who have predispositions one way or the other. Secondly, people with whom you can talk. And thirdly, people who have a degree of intelligence, you know, that they don't have to go on Wheel of Fortune to buy a verb.
When you're meeting with candidates, what's the one or two, three things that you ask a candidate that will help you determine if they're worthy of supporting?
Well, again, I'm not being a single issue candidate or client. Makes it more difficult, but yet makes it more easy because I've got a lot of different wells to go to. I really want to find, if it's a candidate and it's not somebody who's elected, I want to know about their campaign.
If they're viable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the old saying, my saying, I'll support the winner. You know, I just need to figure out who it is.
Yep.
And so you look for certain keys, you know, who they are perhaps have running their campaign, yep, who supports them, what the demographics of their district are like, and very honestly, whether they're willing to and are going door to door.
To work.
Because this, getting elected to the legislature is retail politics.
It still is. Absolutely still is. I tell people that all the time. If you're not willing to work, if you're not willing to go door to door, forget the money.
That's right.
Let's start with, are you willing to put the shoe
leather
in? And I don't think anybody, and I've never been a candidate. I've, you know, helped plenty of candidates through the years, but I don't think people understand that until they do it.
And it's really best illustrated perhaps by, I mean, I could give you a number of stories, but when Ben Nelson won the Democratic primary, beat Bill Hoppner by 17 votes.
Yep.
Ben Nelson was out knocking on doors on election day, and Bill Hoppner was at home.
There you go.
I mean, 17 votes.
Man.
And Colby Koash finished 1,000 votes behind.
Yep.
In the primary, knocked on every door, viable door in the district 3 times, came back and won the general election.
For people to run for political office, you have to have the will to do it and the ability to put a sentence or two together, but you also have to do the work.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't end when you get elected.
People
think, oh, whoo, I did that. Now I can just sit back and check into the office. And
instead of you knocking on a potential constituent's door, they're knocking on your door.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming legislative session. Starts in January, the short session, right?
Yes.
And election year for governor. And as you mentioned earlier, the issue of term limits, we're going to lose a lot of people.
Yes, we are. We're going to be 12 vacant seats. And frankly, I think this election, it's going to set the table for the balance of this decade in Nebraska. Yeah. Because we're going to elect at least 12 new members of the legislature. We're going to elect, and we're going to elect a new governor. Yeah. So it's going to make a big, big difference. If you go back 8 years, you can and reset, it was kind of the same thing. And yes. So these past 8 years, they've been dominated on the executive side, obviously, by Governor Ricketts, and on the legislative side, by those people who were elected then. I think 5 or 6 of them are chairs now. And so it's certainly going to, as I say, set the table for the next 8 years.
I find it fascinating that because of term limits, you don't have that institutional knowledge of, you know, the old saying, and you can address this better than I, but, you know, as a freshman senator, you barely got any mic time, let alone a leadership. And now we've got freshman senators who are chairing committees.
There are a few unexpressed thoughts today.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So what do you see coming up as the opportunity? Well, let me put it this way, Walt. What are some of the, and again, getting up in the helicopter and looking down on the forest, not necessarily the clients that you have, but what, please tell me if there are clients that you have, but what are the issues that are most important that are really need to be start to be addressed in the legislature?
You know, there's an old saying, and you can say this about every session, taxes and spending are going to be one of the major issues. And then you always have subsets of issues. This year, it's going to be both, in that the state has a lot of money.
We got a lot of money.
We've got ARPA money. We've got excess money in the rainy day fund.
Yep.
The state's budget is about $4.4 billion. Okay, just put this in context. We're going to have over $1 billion in ARPA money that the legislature can spend.
That's the federal money.
Yes,
that's coming in.
And we're going to have $2.5 billion for roads. In addition, we are going to have available funds equal to or greater than our existing 1 year budget.
Wow.
And so you've got. Yeah, we've got clients who are applying for ARPA funds. And, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I was kidding to Senator Stinner, who's the appropriations chair. I said, Senator, you're probably going to find it's harder to give away $1 billion than it was to cut $1 billion out of the budget when you were first elected.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine everybody lined up at his door?
Yes, I can. So that's going to be paramount. But also, the coupling with that, because of the available revenue, you're going to see a real push to do something with regards to taxes. Now, I'll be honest with you, we're not going to, property taxes are, you know, one of the biggest arguments against statehood in the 1860s was that if we became a state, it was going to increase property taxes.
so they were right, because
when we were a territory, the feds paid to run state government. Well, then all of a sudden we've got to run our own. And back then, where'd you turn to? We turned to property tax. We didn't have income tax. They didn't even know what the hell sales tax was.
Right, right.
So they taxed liquor and land. That was, yeah.
Yep.
So you'll see a push to do that. I don't see the sales tax being reduced. I could see something going down with regards to the income tax. Property tax perhaps makes some more funds available for the property tax relief, depending on how that's structured. Right now, this last tranche of money was run through an income tax method. And yet about 25% of the money that went unclaimed because it was not necessarily an efficient way to distribute that. So I think we'll see the Revenue Committee addressing that, have the appropriations on the other. If you look around to the other committees, criminal justice is going to be a big thing in judiciary. I predict we're going to have to build a new penitentiary because you simply have to have a place to put people.
Yeah.
But I also think conjunctive with that, there's going to be a push to do programs, which we've never had programs. Hell, you can't get a GED today at the Penn because you don't have a place to put people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, those are kind of the issues, again, as you said, people get excited about. And I'm fascinated by the issues that don't make the headlines, the things that you're fighting hard for your clients behind the scenes that make a difference in people's lives, but don't necessarily make the headlines.
Well, and a lot of those are technical things. I mean, especially with regards to, let's say, banking and insurance, big thing.
Sure.
And education, as far as the various programs that they have.
Well, and yeah, let's face it, boy, education continues to be a hot button issue.
Everybody wants state dollars and they want local control. Well, the two are not very compatible.
Right.
It's that simple. Yeah. They just aren't.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody wants the state to be negotiating teacher contracts or to be developing, you know, curriculum.
Right.
To decide what students are expelled, if you will, or punished. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, education always is. And because it deals with kids, it's always something that's in the news.
But what do you look forward to in the next session that you hope doesn't repeat from last session?
Well, what I look forward to is greater access, to be very honest with
you.
And I think we're going to see that unless the new variant precludes that. So that's something.
Getting back to normalcy, because it has to be just being able to be face-to-face with people and having those conversations. That's your business.
Well, things are going to be reset. I don't know if we'll ever get... I don't think we necessarily get back to the way it was, but we'll have a new normal.
A new normal.
Yeah.
Well, let me just close, Walt, by thanking our hosts. And you may be familiar with some of these folks. The Nebraska Horsemen, Nebraska Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. Could you get them to change that name so it's similar for me to say?
I think that name came about in the 30s when we first legalized gaming. We just call them the Horsemen.
The Horsemen. So we're so thankful for their sponsorship. War Horse Gaming, a production, editing, and distribution by BCOM Solutions. Ms. Kim Remington is the operations manager at Parsons Public Relations. And we all go back years.
Oh, absolutely.
Dear Kim Remington. And so thank you, Kim, for... you're not on camera tonight. You get the night off.
Yeah.
And Pints and Politics theme music by Jack Rodenberg. You may recognize that name here in town. And thank you for our hosts, Fuse Co-working, and of course, Parsons Public Relations. And our guests, Mr. Walt Radcliffe.
It's been a pleasure.
Walt,
thank you.
Cheers to you, my friend.
Yes, indeed. And have a very happy holiday.
Happy holidays.
Yes.